Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins, and folks, have we got a show for you today. As I'm sure everybody is aware, it has been quite a busy week between the investigations into Donald Trump and the recently launched criminal investigation into Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. We're going to have Judd Legum here, a journalist who actually got his hands on the materials that DeSantis and his little allies used to trick migrants into getting on a flight to Martha's Vineyard. Judd's going to be here to tell us all about that story, including all of the latest developments. And of course, we've got to talk about what happened with Donald Trump in New York this week as Attorney General Letitia James announced that she was filing a $250 million lawsuit in addition to referring the Trump family for criminal activity to the Southern District of New York as well as to the IRS. We also have Matt Gaetz seeking a pardon for the ongoing trafficking investigation that threatens to take down his entire political career, and Marjorie Taylor Greene promising us that she is going to try to impeach President Biden every single week after the midterms. All that and more is coming up in just a few moments, but don't forget, you can get the full show every single week. Go and sign up to become a member at ROFpodcast.com, and you can get Ring of Fire every day of the week on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. So we got to start today by obviously talking about the biggest news of the week. And that, of course, is Donald Trump now facing a $250 million civil lawsuit being filed by the Attorney General of the state of New York, Letitia James. Now, this is, of course, the result of a years-long investigation into Donald Trump, his adult children, and the Trump Organization. The investigation was looking at the potentially inflated or deflated values, depending on who they were talking to, that the Trump Organization was assigning to their properties to either avoid paying taxes or to secure bigger bank loans. Letitia James has done an absolutely phenomenal job with this investigation. And even though, of course, Trump is out there attacking her this week, calling her somehow a racist, he referred to her once as peekaboo, which I'm not even exactly sure what that means. But this individual, Letitia James, has fought harder than probably anybody else to conduct this investigation, just to be able to conduct it. She had to go through court battle after court battle because Donald Trump continued to throw up roadblocks, not wanting to turn over his taxes, not wanting to turn over the financial information from his businesses, not willing to give up his bank records. She was able to get court judgments in her favor to get the banks to cooperate, to force Mazars, Donald Trump's accounting firm, to hand over his information, and of course, to get his tax information. As I said, how hard she fought just to be able to do the investigation, that in and of itself is beyond admirable. And we should all take a moment to appreciate how far she came with all of this, when I think other investigators would have probably just given up by this point. But she stuck with it, and now we've got this lawsuit. So what does the lawsuit mean? $250 million is what she's seeking against Donald Trump and, of course, Don Jr., Eric, and Ivanka. So that's the small part, right? Okay, you can assume for $250 million, Trump claims he's worth at least $10 billion, drop in the bucket. Now, if Trump was smart, he'd pay it and just be like, okay, we're done. Let's not go on to trial. Let's just give you, here's your money. I'll get out of here. See you later. So here's some things that folks may not know. Not long ago, Donald Trump actually tried to settle. He tried to settle this issue with Letitia James. They offered an undisclosed amount of money, he and his legal team, and she rejected it. So when I talk about how hard she fought just to be able to conduct this investigation, that's another facet of it, because she could have taken the easy way out. She could have absolutely said, oh, a settlement? Okay, yeah, sure, we'll take it, and we're done. Move on, end of the day. But she didn't do it because she knew she had a case. She knew she had a rock-solid investigation and that she was going to be able to hit him for much more than he would have been able to settle for. But the civil lawsuit, to me, that's the small part. Of course, she did say that as part of this, she is hoping to be able to bar the Trump Organization from doing business in New York. She wants to ban them from buying any real estate in New York. So what would happen in a situation like that is that if they put basically a hold, which I don't think that's the proper legal term, but let's just call it a hold on the Trump Organization that would not allow them to move out of the state of New York, then what would happen at that point is if she is successful, the company would be forced to dissolve. Now, if they're forced to dissolve, all they would have to do is move to a different area of the country, restart the company there. But again, you're building it from essentially nothing after having to dissolve it. So that could be an interesting thing. Or if there is no hold placed on the company, what they could do is just move the headquarters to a different area. That's actually pretty simple, but it would, of course, prevent them from doing any business in New York, which means Trump Tower would not be able to operate. Because think about that. He's barred from selling real estate. Those condos in Trump Tower are real estate. Couldn't sell them. Couldn't rent them. Couldn't do anything with them. So he would likely be forced to sell off his properties in New York, which would be the biggest blow to Donald Trump financially and egotistically that he could take. But the bigger part, obviously, of Letitia James' big press conference this week was her announcement that she is referring Trump and his kids for criminal charges to both the Southern District of New York, which would be a federal investigation, as well as to the IRS. So the New York investigation would likely focus on bank fraud, you know. And with bank fraud, there's always wire fraud, transfer fraud, things like that. But yes, lying to a bank about your assets, lying to a bank about your worth. They even lied, according to the press conference that James did, they even lied about the square footage of apartments in Trump Tower. Like, easily verifiable things that if they just walked in there, they said, no, this is, you've told me this place is way bigger than it is. That's crazy. They actually tripled the square footage of it in order to secure a bigger bank loan. So bank fraud, that's pretty easy. I think the jurisdiction down there in New York is going to be able to handle that. And it is interesting, of course, that she referred this to a federal investigation rather than Manhattan. And I think that was a smart play because we all know what's happening in Manhattan. You got DA Alvin Bragg, who inherited an office that was literally, according to the people that worked there, they were 10 days away from filing criminal charges against Donald Trump for these same things. So James says, screw it. I'm not going to go to Bragg. I'm not going to hand this to him. I'm going to give it to the Southern District of New York. I'm going to have the U.S. attorney there do it. So that kind of supersedes Alvin Bragg's jurisdiction. Although Bragg did come out this week, of course, and said, no, we're still looking into this. We could still do something. No, you won't. You're a coward. You don't deserve the job. And then the IRS, right? The one group in the United States that nobody ever wants to tangle with because it typically doesn't end well, the IRS. If, as James claims, she does have evidence that Donald Trump deflated the values and the worth of his properties in order to pay less in taxes, that's tax fraud. Again, cut and dry, fairly simple. Look at what he placed the values at. Look at what the actual values were. Look at what he paid in taxes. That's an investigation. Honestly, this IRS could knock that out over a weekend if they wanted to. That's how easy that would be to prove. Now, I know I'm probably oversimplifying that, but really, when she's already done all the legwork, Letitia James is handing you all of this stuff on a silver platter saying, look at all of the evidence I have compiled. I've put it in a neat little list for you. There's bullet points. There's summaries. Everything you need is right here. So go ahead and do it. That's what we're dealing with. And again, that's another part of the beauty of it. is that these, you know, the Southern District of New York, the U.S. attorney there, as well as the IRS, they don't have to go back and redo all the work that she did. They're not starting from the ground up. These will not be years long investigations before they act on the criminal referrals. They have it. What they have to do is sort through it and determine whether or not they believe it is a prosecutable offense. We could have some resolutions to this within a year. And I know even that is like, oh my God, why a year? It does still take a little time, right? She didn't lay it all out for them to where they can just walk into court tomorrow and say, okay, let's do this. No, it does take a little time, but it's not going to take as much time as obviously James had to take dealing with the hurdles, compiling the information, combing through it, and putting her case together. Now that her case is together and she has all of that, it really is a matter of the other agencies looking at the information, determining if it's actionable, and moving forward from there. So I got high hopes. Look, you know, and I will say, I've talked about on this show, we don't want to get our hopes too high, right? We don't want to be optimistic about these things. Digby and I talked about it last week. But it feels different this time. It really does. It really feels like the tide has turned and that Donald Trump might actually face justice thanks to the hard work of Letitia James. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is now facing a class action lawsuit from the asylum seekers that he shipped from Texas to Martha's Vineyard. And there's a whole lot more happening in between all of that. And joining me to discuss this is Judd Legum with Popular Information. Judd has done a phenomenal job on reporting everything that is taking place to the point where, Judd, correct me if I'm wrong, but the DeSantis administration has addressed you and your reporting on what's taking place. So I think that's a badge of honor.
The campaign, yes, they've been responding to what I've been doing. Although, you know, obviously it doesn't get too much into the facts that I've been reporting, but they're trying to push back a little bit.
So let's start obviously at the very beginning. Last week, we find out that Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, pays to have these asylum seekers sent from Texas. I believe a stop right here in my district in Florida. And then another stop, North Carolina, perhaps, and then all the way up to Martha's Vineyard. And there's so much more than just paying for the plane. So take us to how did they get these people on those planes?
Well, that's really the key question that underlies all these lawsuits. There's now a criminal investigation as well by a Texas sheriff. And what we do know, and Ron DeSantis has said, that he hired contractors. Now, we don't know who these people are, what their names are, what the group is. Hopefully, we'll learn more about that. But we know that these contractors were targeting migrants in the San Antonio area of Texas, which is interesting because Texas is not Florida, which is the state that Ron DeSantis represents. But he had to send people to Texas. And they really targeted people, according to this civil lawsuit that was ultimately filed, who were suffering from chronic food insecurity. They had fled Venezuela, where, according to their asylum claims, they are being persecuted. They turned themselves over to the authorities. They're in the country legally now while they await a determination on their asylum claims to see if they're going to be granted asylum. And they are struggling. They are hungry. And according to the lawsuit, these operatives who were hired by DeSantis were offering $10 McDonald's gift cards. But you could only get the gift card, at least in the case of some of the, according to some of the migrants that have sued, if you signed the consent form to go on this trip to, they initially were told, Boston, New York, ultimately found out it was Martha's Vineyard. That's one of the ways in which they were convinced to sign these forms. The other thing that we know, or that we were told initially, is that they were promised jobs, they were promised cash assistance, they were promised assistance with housing, they were promised assistance with getting their kids in school, they were promised assistance getting social security numbers. all of the things that you would want and that, in fact, these people desperately need right now, of course, all of these promises were completely empty. One of the things that I reported on was not only were these promises made orally, but there was a packet, kind of a crude sort of pseudo government packet that where they listed out all of the benefits that people would receive. And then, of course, when they landed, they realized it was all a ruse. None of these benefits were really coming to them, and they had been abandoned by the people who had convinced them to go on the trip.
So if we're looking at this from an investigatory standpoint, they put together these packets, these brochures, they pass them out to these asylum seekers. And there's also the issue of this mystery woman, Perla, which, you know, we can get to that in a moment. But if I'm, you know, the sheriff's office in Bexar County, Texas, looking at this, you know, OK, well, they had documents and things like that printed. So there's going to be a record somewhere of where these things were printed. I seriously doubt, you know, a DeSantis or Republican staffers are sitting in their office putting these things together. It may have happened that way, possibly. But, you know, more than likely, they took them to the usual print shop where they go and they get their stuff done. So there would be witnesses, there would be, you know, files, there would be transactions. There's a big paper trail is essentially what I'm trying to say with all of these papers. So that could definitely be a bit of a smoking gun if we're able to find out where these things were printed, go through camera footage, see who dropped them off, you know, link them to a staffer of this administration or possibly Abbott administration. There's lots of things that can easily be found out once we start unraveling that thread, which hopefully is, you know, what those investigators are doing.
Yeah. And some of that might not even be necessary because as part of the political response, you know, there's two tracks here, right? And what you're talking about is the legal track, which is really important because now potentially criminal liability, potential civil liability. But there's also the political track where they're trying to defend themselves and their conduct from a political perspective. And on Monday, after this initial report came out and this brochure started circulating, they actually had a call. Now, I don't know what exactly was said because I wasn't invited to this call, but they invited some right-wing outlets who were more sympathetic to the DeSantis perspective. And they essentially defended these brochures. They said these brochures were accurate because it was information that was taken from the state of Massachusetts website. Now, that's true, but it was information taken from the state of of Massachusetts website describing benefits for an entirely separate group of people. You know, people who were designated refugees by the UN and, you know, were sent to Massachusetts for resettlement, which is something, you know, some folks from Afghanistan have been handled that way. There's folks from around the world, and that's an important program for people, and there's lots of benefits that go along with it. You know, those benefits are not available if you come to the United States and are trying to get an asylum claim. So they have essentially – now, I don't know if in that call they've really admitted – you know, were they just defending the document or were they admitting that they produced the document? They certainly at least were defending it. And then they said, you know, kind of implicitly acknowledging that these benefits weren't available. They said, well, nothing in there says that the benefits would be available immediately, which is interesting because, of course, some of the benefits will never be available. If years from now, some of these migrants get their asylum, get asylum granted, yes, they will get some benefits, but you can get those benefits anywhere. You don't need to travel to Massachusetts today on this plane to get, there's some medical benefits, some financial benefits that come once you get your asylum claim granted. But that's has nothing to do with traveling to Massachusetts. So anyway, the point is that as they're trying to solve this or respond to this politically, you know, they may be creating more legal problems for themselves.
And, you know, as I mentioned, and I know you're well aware, the Perla, who is this mystery woman that this, DeSantis administration may have hired her? We don't even really know. We don't even know if obviously Perla is the real name. But she seems to be, I guess, at the heart of the recruiting efforts in Texas to get these people. And at one point, Someone claims that they were paid $200 by Perla to go and find more people to sign on. It's a very, very shady, you know, I mean, it's like it's written for a movie script almost.
Yeah.
The level of conspiracy we could be dealing with here.
It's very doubtful that Perla was her real name. I think that her real identity and the identity of whichever group or organization was contracted to execute this scheme is very important, because it can tell us a little bit about, you know, were these people who knew anything about migrants and what would be available to them where, and what the implications of sending them thousands of miles away from where their immigration hearings and check-ins might be to keep their asylum claims valid. We don't know that information. We do know that there were some very shady tactics used by Perla, and there were other people, men, who were involved in this. One of the things that's described in the lawsuit is that in order to gain the trust of the migrants, they would say, hey, here's my phone number. You can call me anytime. When you get to Massachusetts, you have any questions about what's going on, just give me a call. And while they were waiting in Texas, they would call these numbers and they could get in contact with people. Once they landed and sort of discovered that all of the things they were promised were not there, they essentially were just dropped off. There was no effort to tell anyone in Martha's Vineyard, anyone in Massachusetts, they were arriving. They stopped answering these numbers. You know, they essentially these numbers now just went unanswered, and they couldn't get in touch with anyone. So there really was kind of a deliberate effort to gain their trust, kind of build up this trip as the answer to all of their problems. And these folks did have problems because they find themselves in a country that they had, you know, never lived in before. And, you know, they need to get income. They need to eat. They need to do all the things everyone needs to do. And then, you know, kind of just pull the rug out from under them. So, yeah, I think you're right. Who is this Perla? Who are the people who are executing this? That's a very important question. I think once that's found out, they'll probably ultimately be added to the civil lawsuit. And certainly these would be the people that the sheriff in Bexar County would be wanting to talk to and figure out, you know, what were their marching orders? How did they get in contact? You know, who were their contacts, and how was this all put together?
You know, and I think people have to understand here, since these were asylum seekers and they came in here legally, they did the process, you know, they were in the system, moving them around the country is not illegal. So if all DeSantis or whoever had done was gone to Texas and say, hey, guys, who wants to load up on a plane and let's go to Martha's Vineyard? I'll drop y'all off. That, believe it or not, is 100% legal. He could have done that. Now, where the funds for that came from, that's where you could run into a little legal issue there. But just moving these people around the country is not illegal. And so that's why the sheriff and the criminal investigation is focusing on the deception, because he repeated that word multiple times in his press conference, deception. To get these people on board, that's when you cross that legal line about what you can and cannot do. And when we're talking about other individuals that are likely involved, you know, the mystery Perla, we could be looking at conspiracy, because obviously they've paid somebody. Somebody paid somebody to go out there, deceive these individuals, and then pay others to deceive these individuals under false pretenses. So there's a lot of moving parts to this. And this isn't going to be something, obviously, you know, that the sheriff's office is going to come out in a month and say, all right, we found it all. This is going to be a very long process. And that's always frustrating. But, you know, hey, there's lights at the end of the tunnel always, because the New York Attorney General this week kind of showed, hey, sometimes it takes a while, but we get the things we need. But I see so many layers to this, and I don't even know how they start or where they start, but I think we're going to find a lot more players than it looks like on the surface right now.
Yeah, and already even though obviously there's no outcome to the civil lawsuit, which was just filed, you know, a couple of days ago, to this criminal investigation that was just launched Monday night was the announcement of the criminal investigation. The attention and the scrutiny on DeSantis, his operatives, their tactics, you know, may already be having an impact. We do know that there was a flight, another flight. I mean, DeSantis has said publicly that he planned to keep doing this. He's got this pot of $12 million. Now, whether the supposedly that money is really supposed to be taking migrants from Florida elsewhere, you know, is it legal to go to another state, send them to Florida, and then send them? I think that's a very open question. But he said he's going to continue this. He wants to spend every last dime of that $12 million to ship migrants to various places around the country that he thinks are symbolically important. We know that there was one such flight scheduled this week to go from Texas to Florida to Delaware to a small airport near President Biden's beach home in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And that didn't happen. And there's, you know, really what I think is kind of a bombshell report in the Miami Herald that came out last night that says this was underway. I mean, they had already recruited the migrants. They spoke to many of the migrants that had been recruited to go on this flight to Delaware, that they had signed these so-called consent forms to travel to Delaware, told they would be leaving at 5 a.m. the next morning. They were being put up in a hotel. Promises were made of jobs and other things. The same kind of playbook was followed. And then, but then at the last minute on the night, you know, they were told on the night, this next group of migrants was told on the 19th that they would be leaving at 5 a.m. on the 20th. You know, they would sort of start their journey first to the airport and then, you know, all these flights. That never happened. The migrants weren't even really told why, but I think one reason it wouldn't be, crazy to speculate that DeSantis may have changed his plans now that there is a criminal investigation into his conduct, and might be rethinking if he's going to continue with this. Now, I don't know. We could have more flights next week. They could be going who knows where. You know, it's unclear whether he's really been chasing, but we're already seeing clearly there's some reconfiguring and rejuggling of what they're really going to do.
You know, one of the things that strikes me as odd, because we've seen these flight plans, and the flight you're talking about, they had already released the flight plan. Maybe not released it, but it did get leaked. All of the flights have made a stop in my district here in Florida. Now, I am in Florida's first congressional district. They're not stopping at the one big airport we have, or even the smaller private airport next to it. They're stopping at even smaller private airports here in this particular district. So it strikes me as odd as to why they're stopping in this particular district. Now, Florida's a big place. We got lots of districts. There's other places they could stop. Why here in the district that coincidentally is represented by Matt Gaetz? You know, for one of them to stop here, sure, I get it. For all of them, all these flight plans we've seen, because there's been several at this point, all of them have a stopover in Florida's first congressional district. I don't know. Something about that just raises a red flag to me. We're not a big district. There's nothing significant about it here. So why here is my big question. I know we don't have an answer.
But yeah, I can give you a couple of data. I don't know why, but I can give you a couple of data points, which is we know that there's a contractor. I believe it's Vitrol. Is the name of it. I might be getting that name wrong, but there's a contractor that does flights that's been paid now about $1.5 million by the state of Florida. There was an initial payment of over $600,000, then there was a follow-up payment more recently of $900,000. And we know that both that company and the CEO of that company have been Republican donors, donated to the Republican Party of Florida, but also have donated both to Matt Gaetz and to PACs that were established to support Matt Gaetz. So there is a political connection between this company that has been hired and Matt Gaetz. Now, does Matt Gaetz know these people, or are they just people who like Matt Gaetz? I don't know, but it's possible that there's a relationship between Matt Gaetz and this company. And it raises the question, which I think you're raising, is Matt Gaetz involved in this? We don't know the answer to that, but certainly there's some connections here that make that more likely. I think overall, why they're not just flying from San Antonio to the next destination, which would be the most straightforward thing to do. You know, Florida is not on the way between San Antonio and Martha's Vineyard or San Antonio and Delaware, is that DeSantis got this pot of money to take people from Florida to points unknown. He has said publicly that he's been unable to find enough migrants who are willing to take these flights. You know, you kind of need to make a big media splash. You need a big group. You can't just send one person and trick one person to go to Martha's Vineyard, because then there's like, okay, there's a guy in Martha's Vineyard. You need a whole group to make a big media splash, which is the whole point of this. And so it seems to be trying to get into technical compliance with the law. I think there's a lot of people who believe that maybe this is trying to be too cute and you're not really complying with the law if you're just sending them there for a second before you send them on to your next destination. But I think that the connection to Gaetz and his involvement of this is something that needs to be investigated. And we do know that, of course, DeSantis and Gaetz have a relationship, you know, that they're political allies, that they work together on things. I mean, we know that much. Whether they're working together on this thing, we don't know, but it certainly wouldn't be out of the ordinary for them to collaborate on some sort of, political operation.
So, yeah, I mean, that's definitely a question, unfortunately, we don't know the answer to. And hopefully, again, the investigators can try to figure this out, because this is obviously a big deal. And it seems to me there's quite a few loopholes. You know, okay, this money's earmarked only for Florida, but he's spending it in Texas. But, oh, wait, step off the plane real quick. Now you're technically in Florida. Now we can. So there's ways, unfortunately, I think DeSantis could weasel his way out of this if criminal charges were even to come. And that is hugely unfortunate, because it's very obvious there was deception. It's very obvious that this should not have happened. But the way the laws are written, and because he is, you know, in charge of laws here in Florida, pretty much, it does seem like I see a window where he can easily walk away from this unscathed.
Yeah. And I think the other question is, you know, when you, because you have a couple of legal issues, core legal issues. You have the money. Was it being spent appropriately? Then you have the deception. I mean, I think it's going to be, you know, initially we just had sort of a kind of a he said, she said. You had the migrants saying that they were deceived, that they were promised. You had the DeSantis and other people who work for the DeSantis administration saying, no, this was all voluntary. There was no deception. It seems pretty clear that ultimately it will be established there was deception. We already have this brochure. And it just seems like the evidence is stacking up that these people were promised a whole bunch of stuff. And it makes sense intuitively too. Why would you travel thousands of miles if you weren't told that there'd be something worthwhile, to make that trip? But I think then the question becomes, well, how much was DeSantis himself? Like, who was it? Was this a rogue? You know, these contractors, was it just they were just out doing their own thing, or was this coming from DeSantis or his top aides, the strategy? Now, obviously, there might be a paper trail, there might be emails, there might be texts, those sorts of things, but there could be an effort to kind of separate himself. We just told them to go to Texas and tell people the truth, and then they got, you know, a little bit out of control. So they haven't really gone there yet. You know, right now they're just saying they're not, haven't been deceived. But as the evidence mounts that they were deceived, it'll be interesting to see if they take some steps to kind of distance themselves from it.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, once all this is over, you're going to end up with probably some people at the very least, probably lower totem pole, again, at the very least, that do face some kind of charges over the deception, the lies, and all of that. And hopefully it does reach all the way to the top, but that's where it comes down to, like, you got to have good police work. You know, like you said, you got to get the emails, you got to look at the text messages, we have to find all these paper trails, you know, who made these packets and the brochures? Was it staffers for the administration, staffers for the campaign, just independent contractors? You know, who knows at this point? And that is the biggest thing, is there's a lot of unknowns because this is a fresh investigation. It's not even a week old. I mean, the story itself is only a week old. So with all that's come out in such a short amount of time, to me, that's already remarkable. And I think, obviously, as this goes forward, we might not get as much information as we have this past week, but there's still going to be that slow trickle. We're going to continue learning things. DeSantis can't help himself. He's going to keep, messing up, I guess, a little bit here and there. So we will be learning more. It may not come at the speed that we would like it to, but I think much more will come out before we get really into the heart of the investigation.
I agree. You know, it's obviously this is happening in a very short time period. I think that both from a legal perspective and a political perspective, it's probably been more there's probably been more issues than maybe DeSantis originally anticipated. He may not care. You know, this may be more about appealing to sort of the hardcore Republican base that he might need to defeat, you know, Donald Trump or another top Republican to run for president in 2024. And you know, all of this is just collateral damage to achieve that goal. But I think certainly it's been a rougher road than he may have been anticipating when he kind of hatched this scheme and then started executing it, you know, as you said, about a week ago.
You know, and he definitely wanted the credit for this. He, you know, came out immediately after it happened and said, "We did this. I'm the guy. Look at me." And then, of course, probably didn't foresee potential legal consequences and the huge backlash. But one last thing I want to talk about, too. It's not just the backlash, though. What we saw take place in Martha's Vineyard was nothing short to me of a miracle. Because rather than DeSantis proving that, oh, these wealthy liberals, they're all going to freak out and, oh, God, now we hate immigrants. You're right. They banded together people all over the country. I mean, this area got so many donations. They had to come out multiple times publicly and say, please stop sending stuff. We have more than we can ever even use up here. The outpouring of support for these people has been tremendous, and it kind of disproves DeSantis's theory that everybody's terrible and hates these people deep down. It's not true.
Yeah, I mean, I think by all accounts, the people of Martha's Vineyard behaved admirably. They, you know, made sure these folks had a place to stay, had food, had clothing, that sort of thing. Obviously, the DeSantis is trying to make a big deal of the fact that they were moved after a couple of days to Cape Cod, which is really another vacation destination. It's not a horrible place to go. But, you know, that was in their interest. They have permanent housing. They can, you know, have places for families, for individuals, services, all the things you need for a longer term stay. So it made sense for them to go there rather than stay. I believe they were in a church or something of that nature that's not really set up for even temporary housing beyond a day or two. And I think part of this, and, you know, maybe this is less so Martha's Vineyard, but more just the general theory behind this, the idea that liberal enclaves, you know, places like New York and San Francisco and, you know, elsewhere, Washington, D.C., that folks who live there do not have any experience living with or alongside recent immigrants. I mean, it's nuts. You know, there's lots of immigrants in these liberal places, and they're fully, you know, integrated into the community. They're an essential part of the fabric of life, you know, in all of these so-called liberal communities. So it's not really going to shock anyone in Washington, D.C. or, you know, San Francisco or wherever they're going to send folks next to be confronted with immigrants. It's not like people who live in these cities have never seen, you know, someone who's recently immigrated from another country. So that's kind of the conceit that I think is sort of just strange. You know, there's plenty of immigrants outside of Texas and Florida.
Yeah. Well, they would certainly like to think otherwise. But Judd Legum, tell everybody where they can find you, you know, websites, Twitter, everything. What you got? Yeah.
Two main things. I would just say the website popular.info. You can sign up for the newsletter. I'm going to be obviously tracking this case, and you know, I do a lot of stuff with money and politics and other accountability journalism projects. And then I'm on Twitter at Judd Legum, L-E-G-U-M. So I have other random thoughts that I post there. So
Judd Legum, thank you so much for joining us this week on Ring of Fire.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want the full show every single week, go sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com. Not only do you get the full show every week, but you also get exclusive access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire podcast archive. All of those full shows that you may have missed are right there waiting for you when you become a member.